its top beaded with drops of water, and looked over at Newt. His friend's face was illuminated by the green light, and for a moment he looked sick. Thomas shook the thought away.
"We probably shouldn't mess with this," Newt said, looking up from the vat. "Looks bloody radioactive to me. We could wake up with 3 extra fingers and 1 less eye in the morning."
Thomas smiled, only half hearing him, looked back at the otherworldly container below, feeling almost hypnotized. Mist churned beneath the surface, swirling in little whirlpools. But there was something underneath that. He could just barely make out a dark outline. He almost felt that if he just kept staring at it, whatever it was would reveal itself.
"Tommy," Newt said, "let's move on, yeah? This thing gives me the creeps."
Thomas couldn't move on. He desperately wanted to know. A lumpy object moved in the container, bumping against the glass with a heavy thump, and Thomas jumped back. The object squeaked along the container's side for several seconds before vanishing into the fog again. The thing had been tan-colored, with lines like veins running through it. An arm. It had looked like an arm. Thomas shivered, and the hairs on his neck and arm stood straight up. He looked over at Newt, who met his gaze with one of horror.
"Why are we still standing here?" Newt asked. "Good question."
Thomas moved to leave when another lump of flesh pressed up against the glass. It appeared to be the torso of whatever creature was being held in the tank. It, too, had veins, and something like mucus covered its skin. Thomas had to fight his stomach not to send dinner up his throat.
"Look, Tommy," Newt said, leaning closer to the glass, pointing. "It has things growing out of its skin."
He stepped back from the container, shaking his head as he glanced away. Thomas couldn't look away until he saw what his friend was talking about. With a sudden surge of bravery, he leaned on the edge of the container and wiped off some condensation. The meaty mass pressed against the window had large, bulbous growths, several of them. They looked like tumors or gigantic blisters, and unless his eyes were tricking him, Thomas could swear the growths were where the glowing light was coming from. Finally, he stepped back and rubbed his eyes. He'd seen a lot of strange things in his life, but this took the cake.
"What?"
he said, drawing out his words.
"In the world is that?" "No bloody idea,"
Newt replied, refusing to look back.
"Have we had enough yet?"
Tendrils of mist cascaded up his shirt and parted around his head.
"Plenty," Thomas agreed. "Let's go."
He'd had yet another peek behind the mysterious curtain of wicked, and he didn't like what he'd seen. A somber mood hung between them as they made their way across the rest of the R&D room, the security tunnel Teresa had told them about, and then finally to a false wall behind a closet that led to the barracks of Group B. Every time Thomas thought he'd kind of gotten used to things around Wicked, he came across something like a glass container in which a hideous monster with glowing tumors grew like a fetus in a womb. They obviously weren't telling him everything. Of course they weren't. He wasn't a naive idiot. But sometimes it seemed like they told him nothing, like they were playing him like everyone else, like he was just another subject. Who knew what kind of horrors were in store for those sent to the two mazes? The Grievers? This thing growing in the R&D vat? He sighed as Newt pressed against the wall and popped out a large panel. It revealed a small closet, mostly dark, with a door just a few feet away that led into the large barracks room. The door of the closet was ajar, and through the opening, Thomas could see bunk beds lined up along the walls.
"What if they freak out?" Thomas whispered. "I don't want 40 girls attacking me at once." "I thought you went for that sort of thing," Newt whispered back.
Thomas could barely see him, but he knew his friend was smiling. Thomas shook his head and nudged Newt toward the opening, then followed him through to the other side of the closet. They peered through the door to Group B. The soft sighs of sleep were broken here and there by a sharp snore or the creaks of springs as bodies repositioned. Thomas waited for his eyes to adjust to the darkness. He was scanning the room of bunks when a figure suddenly appeared in front of him. He stifled a yelp and stumbled backward. The girl followed him into the shadows of the closet.
"What do you want?" she whispered fiercely. "Who are you?"
Thomas finally recovered.
"Sorry to sneak in like this. We're from Group A. We're here so Newt can say goodbye to his sister before the maze trials begin."
He couldn't see Newt's face because of the darkness, but he imagined the boy laughing at him for being so startled.
"You could have given us a warning," the girl replied, "before creeping in like kidnappers. What are your names?" "Well, your name, if he's Newt. We know all about Newt. Sonya is one of my best friends."
"I'm Thomas."
"Oh."
She sounded disappointed, or annoyed. Her group had probably heard just as much about him and Teresa as his friends had about Eris and Rachel. Wicked seemed to have spread the word.
"My name's Miyoko. Let me get Sonya."
She slipped off into the barracks room, a shadow among shadows.
"I hope they're on our side," Newt said. "That girl'd take down half of us, yeah?"
Thomas didn't answer. The darkness of the closet suddenly felt menacing. He knew that Wicked had the subject separated into groups of girls and boys for various reasons. It had to do with how they were going to run out the variables later in the trials. But he also knew there was more going on, and he didn't like it. Miyoko reappeared, this time with another girl right next to her. She was a blur as she ran past Thomas, streaking through the door and straight at Newt. They embraced in an unstable hug, stumbling back in the dark little room.
"Here,"
Miyoko said, gently pushing Thomas out of the way so she could swing the closet door closed. Then she turned on a light that seemed as bright as two suns. He squinted and held a hand up to his eyes, temporarily blinded. Newt was crying, and Thomas didn't need vision to know it. The boy sobbed, the sounds muffled by his sister's neck or shoulder. As Thomas's sight returned, he saw that both of them had tears streaming down their faces, and they were hugging each other fiercely. He didn't know how long it had been since the last time they'd seen each other, or if they were able to communicate somehow. But his heart hurt watching them.
"Come on,"
Miyoko said to Thomas, grabbing his arm.
"Let's give them some—"
"I hate them,"
Newt said loudly through his sniffles. He pulled back from his sister and wiped his cheeks.
"I hate every one of them. How can they do this? How can they steal us from our homes and keep us separate like this? It's not right."
He yelled the last word, and Miyoko winced, eyeing the door.
"No, no, no,"
Sonya said in a soothing tone. She put her hands on both sides of her brother's face, looking straight into his eyes.
"Don't say that. You're looking at it all wrong. We've got it better than 99% of kids out there. They saved us, Big Brother. What are the odds we'd be alive if they'd left us out there?"
She pulled Newt back into a hug.
"But why did they keep us separate?"
he asked, and the sadness in his voice broke Thomas's heart.
"Why all the tests and the games and the cruelty? I hate them. I don't care what you say."
"It'll all be over someday,"
the younger girl whispered.
"Remember, you're not immune. One day we'll be able to make you safe, and then we'll be back together. Come on. You're my big brother. You're supposed to be the one comforting me."
"I love you, Lizzie,"
he replied, squeezing her hard.
"I love you so much."
He leaned back and looked at her. She smiled, and Newt shook his head, pulling her back into a strong hug. And Thomas had a feeling that was about the best things would get for a while. Chapter 33 229.11.12 7:31 a.m. They were days away from insertion. Days. Thomas could barely sleep. He and Teresa connected via telepathy at bedtime each night, but often they just lingered in silence, without much to say. The mere presence of the other person, somehow there, was always a comfort, though. Aside from his mother, whom he would always love, Teresa had become the closest thing to family, the closest thing to what Newt had with Lizzie, Thomas could ever imagine. The last thing he remembered before the knock that woke him up that morning was Teresa humming to herself. She seemed to do it without thinking. The vibration and tone and feel of it traveled through their connection, and it had sent him off to a deep sleep like he hadn't enjoyed in quite some time. He groggily got up from bed and opened the door. Dr. Page was there, and she looked worried.
"Sorry," Thomas said, rubbing his eyes. "I slept in. But trust me, I needed it."
They'd been working themselves to the bone to get ready for the maze trials.
"It's okay," she replied.
She seemed distracted.
"Chancellor Anderson wants to meet with you and Teresa really fast this morning. Eris and Rachel will be there, too. It's urgent. Hurry and get dressed. You can have breakfast after the meeting."
Thomas realized then that she was a little disheveled, her face pale, and paused before answering.
"I mean it, Thomas," she snapped. "Hurry."
"Okay, okay. I'll be ready in 5 minutes. Make it 3. It was the same conference room in which he'd seen Eris and Rachel for the first time a few months ago. That last time, the room was filled with people. This time around, only 3 people were in attendance besides Thomas and the 3 other elite candidates. Chancellor Anderson, the security officer, Ramirez, and Dr. Page. They sat on one side of the table, and Thomas, Teresa, Eris, and Rachel sat across from them on the other. No one in the room looked very happy.
"Thanks for coming," Anderson began. They always started these things with statements like that, as if Thomas or his friends had a choice in the matter. "I'm afraid I have some sobering news, and I'm not going to beat around the bush. I'm going to just come out and say it."
Instead, he did the opposite. He went silent, trading looks with Ramirez and Page. Thomas watched this until it almost became comical. But the dread in Anderson's voice had been real and heavy.
"Then just say it," Eris said.
Anderson nodded stiffly.
"We think, we believe, that we might have an outbreak on our hands."
He sat back in his chair and let out a weary breath. Looked again to Dr. Page.
"An outbreak?" Teresa repeated. "Of the flare?"
"Page, say something," Anderson grumbled.
Dr. Page folded her hands on the table and looked at the teenagers.
"Yes, the flare. As you can imagine, none of the adults here are immune, so we've taken extreme caution to ensure our safety from the virus. A few months ago, however, we began to worry that we'd had a breach, even though none of our staff exhibited symptoms or tested positive."
"Then what made you worry about it?"
Rachel asked. Not for the first time, Thomas wished that Wicked would let the 4 of them work together more.
"You're aware of the crank pits,"
Anderson said, more of a statement than a question.
"That's the riskiest part of our facilities, but a vital one. It's a trap and a holding facility for cranks that wander onto our grounds, and it provides biological material for our study regarding the virus."
"So what happened?" Thomas asked.
"We keep a strict inventory," Ramirez answered. It was always a surprise when the gruff man spoke. "It's almost like an old-fashioned bee trap down there. They wander in but can't get back out. The holding facility is constantly monitored. We have cameras everywhere."
He paused and made an awful, phlegmy sound somewhere deep in his throat.
"There's a strict no-contact rule without a containment suit. Actually, a 20-foot distance rule. Unless you're a muni, of course. Like you folks."
He sniffed, as if offended by his own words.
"You still haven't told us what happened," Teresa said,
not bothering to hide her disgust for this man. Thomas knew full well that she, like he, associated the man with all things Randall.
"One of the cranks went missing," Ramirez said. "Three times a day we take an inventory, accounting for newcomers from the outside forests, less those who are removed for lab needs. There has never been a discrepancy, not once in all my years, until a few months ago. One up and vanished."
Those words settled for a moment, no one speaking. Thomas felt a shivery fear despite being immune. He wasn't really afraid of the virus. It was the cranks that terrified him. And to think that one might be hiding somewhere inside the wicked complex made his stomach feel watery.
"We don't want to alarm you or anyone else," Chancellor Anderson said. "But we've brought you in to let you know we've made some decisions. Some hard decisions. For starters, we've decided to shorten the maze trials from 5 years to 2. For all we talk about this being a long, slow process, the possibility of a breakout has given us pause. We might have to be a little more intense with the variables."
Thomas had never felt so uneasy. Anderson was dancing around something here, but he wasn't sure what. Teresa didn't say anything specific in his mind, but she opened up her emotions to him, showing that she shared his ominous feeling.
"We've been working on several possibilities for a Phase 2, even a Phase 3 if it comes to that. Once we get past the initial maze insertions, we'll see how things go."
Thomas immediately thought of what he and Newt had seen in the R&D laboratory. The glass-topped container, the veined skin, the bulbous tumors. Anderson sighed, then put his head in his hands, before looking up again. Thomas had never seen him so frustrated.
"I feel like there's too much to do sometimes," the man continued. He slapped an open hand on the table. "Look, things can be worked out over the next few months as we study and analyze the results within the mazes. Suffice it to say, we have flat trans technology, we have the potential for more human resources, and we're even scouting locations for further trials. It can all happen, and it will happen. Everything in its own time. Reducing the maze trials from 5 to 2 years is simply the right thing to do."
He smiled a weak smile.
"I think half of my frustration with this change is that it took so much effort to build the damn things that it's a shame to see them utilized for less than half the time that we intended."
"He's stalling," Teresa said in Thomas's mind. "There's something he has to say that he doesn't want to say." Thomas gave her a barely perceptible nod. She was exactly right.
"What are you not telling us?" Eris asked.
Anderson at first acted surprised at the question, but then gave a knowing smile.
"Sometimes I forget just how perceptive you kids are. Here's the thing. I'm just nervous, okay? I shouldn't show you that, much less admit it, but there's the truth."
His eyes flicked around the room, then came to rest on the table in front of him before he looked up at each of the kids and let out a breath.
"I guess what I'm trying to say is that this is going to be hard, but I know you're all up to it."
More things were said, more information exchanged during the meeting, but Thomas didn't hear much of it, because it was all dressing. Something had changed. Or someone had chickened out. Somehow Thomas knew that for some reason, at the last second, Chancellor Anderson and his two partners had decided not to tell them everything.
"What's he hiding?"
Thomas asked Teresa when they were finally getting up to leave. But then he looked at Dr. Page, and the odd expression on her face made him realize that he had asked about the wrong person. Chapter 34 229.11.22 8:47 a.m.
"Look at Minho," Teresa said to Thomas.
It was the morning before the big day, the first insertion into the maze. 40 boys from Group A were lined up along the walls of the hallway, ready for their final medical examinations. Newt, Minho, Albi, Galli, all the boys Thomas had gotten to know over the last few years of his life, would be part of the group. Orderlies walked up and down the hall, prepping them to enter the medical rooms, taking temperatures, blood pressures, checking eyes, tongues.
"Yeah, I see him," Thomas replied.
He and Teresa were there at Chancellor Anderson's request to observe and provide moral support. But all he felt was a heavy, heavy sadness at saying goodbye, and he'd stayed silent since arriving. Minho was about 10 boys away from where he and Teresa stood, and he'd been fidgeting all morning. But now it had turned into something worse. His body reminded Thomas of a cocked gun, his muscles coiled as if he were about to spring into action.
"Man," Thomas said, "there's no way he'd try something again. Right?"
Although there were plenty of things to upset their friend. Inside the medical rooms, clearly visible from their place in the hallway, menacing devices hung over each bed. They looked like robot masks, metallic and full of wires and tubes. Thomas assumed they were meant to capture every type of kill zone measurement imaginable, a foundation from which they could study progress within the maze trials.
"Follow my lead," Teresa said.
She pushed away from the wall and walked toward Minho. Thomas followed right on her heels. She had an air of authority about her, so the medical attendants barely glanced her way. She stopped when she got to Minho and put a hand on his shoulder. He flinched, and for an instant Thomas thought he might actually strike out, but then his eyes met hers, and a wave of calm seemed to wash over him, relaxing his muscles as it flowed through his body. To Thomas's surprise, tears formed in the boy's eyes.
"It's okay," Teresa said to him. "Don't make it worse by fighting them. Everything will be fine inside the maze. You'll see." "Aren't you going in with us?" Minho asked.
The response took both Thomas and Teresa by surprise.
Well,
Teresa stammered.
"Not yet,"
Thomas quickly interjected, leaving it at that, hoping his friends wouldn't dig further. A hint of anger flushed Minho's face again, but this time it set firmly.
"Seriously? So you're telling me not to fight them? Are you sure you don't mean us? What exactly are you doing here, Thomas? I don't see you being poked and prodded like cattle."
Albi, just a few feet down the hall, turned to look at the three.
"Yeah," he said. "He's got a good point, if you ask me. You're just going to throw us into a big experiment, then go back to your cush bed and relax? Were you ever going to tell us? Or just let us think you were going in? Then, surprise!"
Thomas had no idea what to say. He'd been able to convince himself that he was the same as his friends, that they didn't care that he'd been separated out, that he had different responsibilities than they did. How could he have ever thought it wouldn't matter? That it wouldn't blow up in his face?
"What? Forget the script you're supposed to follow?" Albi asked. "Or are you just worried about upsetting your buddies?"
He nodded toward the doctors and nurses, who all continued their work as if nothing was happening.
"Guys, come on," Teresa said, finally finding her voice. "We're no different from anyone else. We just do what they ask."
"Say whatever makes you feel better,"
Albi answered. He folded his arms and leaned against the wall, looked the other way. They were understandably on edge. And then the truth was clear as day. Thomas's friends were being sent into the maze, and he wasn't. He didn't know if he'd ever be sent in. He was different from his friends, and no one could ignore it anymore. They stood, backs against the wall, some glaring at him as if he'd known about this the whole time, as if he'd been lying to them. Even Newt, down at the end of the line, looked at Thomas, anger twisting his face. Thomas was absolutely crushed. Minho hadn't said anything, but the fierce, coiled snake look had returned. anger, fear, anxiety about what this new change meant. Thomas understood how they felt, and he was the perfect one to blame. Minho flung Teresa's hand off his shoulder.
"Elby's right," he said. "I've tried and tried to give you guys the benefit of the doubt. Figured you were going to be able to help us. But now it's obvious what you were doing. You've been helping them the whole time. It's all been about getting ready to do this to us, hasn't it?"
He pounded his chest twice as he emphasized the words.
"Minho, listen," Teresa began. "Get out of my face!"
Minho yelled. The world was falling apart, and Thomas could think of nothing to say. Albie, Minho, Newt. Until 5 minutes ago, he'd considered them his best friends, and just assumed they understood his mind and heart. And now, it had all collapsed, and here he was, standing in front of them like a complete idiot. Anything he said sounded like a lie, even to himself. Out of the corner of his eye, he noticed someone approaching down the hall. He looked and saw it was Gally. He'd left his place in line, and his face was aflame with anger. Two nurses followed him, trying to catch up to him before he reached Thomas.
"Thomas!"
the boy yelled, picking up his pace. Only now that he was closer, Thomas could see that his expression wasn't anger. It was fear.
"You have to help us! Can't you help us?"
Two orderlies grabbed the boy before he could get closer, holding him back.
"We know you have some power with them. Help us!"
He sounded desperate and struggled to keep his eyes on Thomas as orderlies roughly turned him around and dragged him into an exam room. Thomas felt powerless. He looked down the line of boys who had been his friends, and his heart broke over and over. Minho, Albie, Newt, their eyes brimming with resentment. How had everything crashed so suddenly? He had to say something, quickly. His chance would be over soon. He had to fix this. They had to know that they were all wrong, that he and Teresa weren't working with Wicked, really. They would help them, even go into the maze themselves if they had to. He had to speak now. Thomas opened his mouth, ready to spill out his words, his pleas, his apologies. But something happened. Something deep inside his brain clicked, and it felt as if a hand reached within his actual body and began to manipulate him, play with his nerves, his thoughts, his everything. As if possessed by an evil spirit, he lost complete control, lost it to someone or something else. He spoke words against his will. "I'm sorry," he said, the tone and pitch of it sounding as foreign as if it came from another person altogether.
"There's nothing I can do."
And then he watched, frozen, helpless, screaming on the inside, as they took his friends away. Chapter 35 229.11.23 1028 a.m. The very next day, Dr. Page arrived right on schedule. Thomas had been awake all night thinking about what had happened, becoming angrier and angrier. By the time his alarm went off, he was ready to unleash it all on her. But when he opened the door and saw the doctor's face, he wilted. What had happened to him made him feel half crazy, and he was scared to bring it up.
"Don't say a word, Thomas," she said.
"There are reasons for things that you don't understand. Also know that I'm not the final say on any decision. But I did get you one victory today. How would you like the day off? You can spend it observing your friends in the maze. I feel like you deserve that much." Thomas's spirit rose, then sank.
"The only reason you guys want me to do that is so you can observe me observing them."
She sighed.
"Do you want to do it or not?"
He swallowed his pride.
"Yeah."
Dr. Page led Thomas to the observation room in which he'd seen Minho tormented by a griever once upon a time. This time the monitors showed various glimpses into the massive green space at the center of the maze, where most of his friends now resided. Dr. Page showed him to a chair at the control deck, and he sat down, already glued to the various scenes playing out across the many monitors. Without saying another word, she left him, softly closing the door. Thomas leaned forward. He watched. They'd had one night in their new home, though none of them had seen the actual maze yet. Wicked had yet to open the doors that led to the maze, saving that for the next day. Thomas watched the boys wander about the large courtyard nestled within the giant walls of the maze itself. Their faces said it all. Their eyes said it all, often visible when a beetle blade could get close enough. They had no idea where they were. They looked disoriented, and the more Thomas watched, the more something felt wrong. Everyone had peeled off, and really seemed to be on their own. He zeroed in on two of the boys he didn't know very well, who were just crossing each other's paths.
"Hey,"
one of them said in a shaky voice.
"Do you know where we are? How we got here?"
The other boy shook his head, looking on the verge of tears.
I don't even know."
He didn't finish, but turned and walked briskly away. Similar things were happening elsewhere. Most of the boys avoided each other, but when they did interact, it seemed as if they were acting like strangers, as if they didn't know who anyone else was, or even who they were themselves. A few names were thrown about, but even those were said with uncertainty. Those masks. That was what the masks had been for. Wicked had done something terrible to their memories. Something to do with their implants, probably. If that was the case, if this was something permanent, Thomas couldn't imagine anything more horrible. It was all they had, their memories. He thought back to when Randall had taken away his name. It had felt like losing part of his soul. And this was far, far worse. How deep did it go? Was it possibly temporary? He found Minho walking briskly along the walls, studying every inch of the structure. He could have been doing it for hours, since before the false sun came up. He was scared, that much was obvious. Losing your memories, combined with being thrown into a stone prison, that had to fill you with a panic beyond what most could imagine. He walked and walked and walked, down one expansive wall to the next, then the next, then the next. It couldn't have been lost on him that he was going in circles. On another feed, Albie sat near the copse of trees, his back against one of the skeletal pines. He was so still, he looked almost lifeless. He looked broken, and it killed Thomas. This young man, whom Thomas knew as fierce and determined, always ready to tackle what came at him. Wicked had been able to turn him into nothing more than a shell. Newt was one of the wanderers, aimlessly walking back and forth from the barn to the fields to the small structure that was meant to be their home. It was nothing more than a shack, really. He had the same empty look in his eyes as Albie. Newt walked slowly to his old friend, as if he were approaching a complete stranger. Thomas pushed a button to get the audio feed from that monitor.
"Do you know where we are?" Newt asked.
Albie looked up sharply.
"No, I don't know where we are,"
he snapped, as if Newt had asked him 100 times and he was sick of hearing it.
"Well, bloody hell, neither do I. Yeah, I think we all get that."
They stared at each other for a long moment, neither dropping his gaze. Finally, Newt said,
"At least I know my name. It's Newt. And you?"
"Albie?" he said it almost like a guess.
"Well, shouldn't we start trying to figure things out?"
"Yeah, we should,"
Albie looked as mean as the night they'd been caught outside the Wicked Complex.
"Well, then," Newt asked.
"Tomorrow, man. Tomorrow. Give us a day to mope, for God's sake."
"Right."
Newt walked away, kicking a loose stone to scatter across the dusty ground. Late that afternoon, Minho tried to climb the wall. The vines were tempting enough, beckoning those who dared to scale the leafy ivy. Minho did just that, gripping it with white-knuckled fists, finding perilous footholds as he inched his way up. Hand over hand, shifting his feet carefully, he climbed. 10 feet. 15 feet. 20 feet. 25. He stopped. He looked toward the sky, then craned his neck to look back down at the ground. A crowd had gathered, cheering him on. Another couple of boys had tackled the vines as well, trying to follow their fellow prisoner's lead. Minho looked up again, down, at the wall, at his hands, up to the sky again, the ground, the sky, the wall, his hands, then without any explanation, despite the abundance of ivy above him, he started back to the ground. He jumped the last few feet, then brushed his hands on his pants.
"Can't be done here," he said. "Let's try another spot."
3 hours and all four walls later, the sky almost dark. He gave up. So did everyone else. That evening, when Dr. Page came to get him, Thomas couldn't believe the day was over already.
"Time to go back to your room," she said gently.
She'd had his meals brought to him throughout the day, so Thomas thought to take advantage of her accommodation by asking a favor. And he didn't want to risk upsetting her by asking about the apparent memory loss. He'd save that for another time.
"Can I come back here in the morning?" he asked. "I feel like I need to see their reactions when the doors open for the first time. It's important."
He tried to insinuate that he meant its importance to the study.
"Okay, Thomas. That'll be fine. You can have breakfast in here."
He stood up, his heart so heavy it felt as if it stayed in the seat. After one last look at his friends, settling down for the evening, talking in small groups, eating some of the food they'd been provided, he turned away. The next morning he got into the observation room just in time. The entire maze shook, and he flicked on the sound. The room he sat in was suddenly filled with the rumbling sound of thunder, and the giant doors began to slide open, an impossible sight to anyone who had never witnessed it before. It was still an impressive sight to Thomas, who had helped build those doors. Thomas's friends gathered, confused, some crying in fear, some of them with such bright expressions of hope on their faces that it just about broke his heart. It seemed pretty obvious that their memories were still lost to them. He watched as they filed out into the corridors of the maze proper and began to explore its vast array of halls, twisting and turning along their patterns. Thomas wondered what they would think the first time the walls out there moved, reforming into a new pattern. He imagined the terrifying times that lay ahead for his friends. And then he remembered the gelatinous creature crouching over Minho, and what would happen the day Wicked decided to unleash that into the maze for the first time.
"Thomas?"
He turned, startled out of his thoughts, to find Dr. Page behind him.
"There will be plenty of other opportunities to watch your friends," she said. "But your responsibilities here take priority, okay? You still have a full schedule. Let's go."
He went, leaving his friends behind. Chapter 36 2:30.3.13 2:36 p.m. Thomas sat in the chair, staring at the bank of monitors across from the control deck, feeling a little better than he had in months, which wasn't saying much. At least he actually wanted to take his next breath, instead of wishing that maybe it wouldn't happen, that some mysterious illness would strike him dead on the spot. It had been a long time since he'd felt okay. And today, he felt okay. Dr. Page continued to let him observe his friends in the maze as long as he kept up with his normal schedule of classes, tests, checkups, and everything else. He no longer had work days since the maze had been completed, so he had extra free time, and even though he knew they were observing him as he sat and watched, this was the only place he wanted to be. The techs had installed a new display system, and maybe that was part of the reason he'd finally been able to snap out of his doldrums, even if it was only for a fraction of each day. Now he could choose any of the Beetle Blade feeds and throw it onto a much improved center screen, which was a full 6 feet across and had spectacular color and detail and improved audio. He loved it, seeing and hearing his old friends in the maze close up, almost as if he were there with them. The entire system was 100 times better, and he knew that his whole life would now revolve around finding more and more excuses to be in this very room, watching, observing, digging for something to give him insight. Sadly, their memories had never returned, a thing that still galled Thomas to no end. He chose Beetle Blade number 37 and swiped it onto the main viewing screen. The display showed Albie and a kid named George standing at the east door of the maze, talking and laughing, both of them eating peaches they'd just plucked out of the track hose scoop. Thomas had never even spoken to George before, but these were the kinds of scenes he craved, shots of the gladers actually enjoying life. It always gave him hope, helped him forget for a while the terrible theft they'd experienced. And with nothing that interesting going on anywhere else, he sat back and watched, wishing he could be there. Just for a visit. Someone knocked on the door. "Come in," Thomas called, not bothering to check who it was when the door opened, then closed. He knew by the sound of the person's steps. He definitely knew. "Hi, Chuck," he said without looking.
"Hey, Thomas,"
the young boy said, his voice filled with the usual enthusiasm. He pulled a chair over and put it right next to Thomas, barely an inch away, and jumped up into the seat with a jovial grunt.
"Anything exciting happen yet?"
"You're looking at it," Thomas replied.
"See that? Look really close. Look at what Albie and George are eating. You won't believe it."
Chuck leaned forward, his hair a wild eruption as usual, and squinted at the screen, searching with all the seriousness he could muster.
"Looks like peaches," he finally said.
"Bingo," Thomas replied, slapping Chuck on the back. "You might be the best analyst in all of Wicked."
"Hardy har har."
That was the kid's favorite response when Thomas teased him.
"You so funny."
That was his second favorite. Thomas had begged Dr. Page to let Chuck serve as his assistant for an hour or two each day. It had become clear that Wicked appreciated the insights Thomas provided, and he insisted that he needed someone to bounce ideas off during these work periods. Teresa was often too busy learning computer systems on top of her normal schedule to help him. He claimed he was grooming Chuck to do great things, but the truth was that Thomas needed him. Being alone often brought his memories crashing in, and Chuck was a beacon that lit the darkness. Dr. Page seemed more than happy to acquiesce, considering the value of studying Chuck's reactions to the things he witnessed. It was pure selfishness on Thomas's part, but he couldn't let it go. He flat out needed Chuck, like a kid with a security blanket. Chuck was a constant bright spot in what had been a miserable couple of months since sending the first batch of subjects in after stealing their memories. If it weren't for Chuck and Teresa, Thomas didn't know how he would have survived. As if the thought had summoned her, which it very well might have, Teresa spoke in his mind.
"Hey, what are you doing?" she asked.
"I just finished prepping the next kid to go in. It's box time for him tomorrow morning. Poor guy."
"I'm in the observation room," he answered. "I'll give you 3 guesses who's sitting right next to me,
and the first two don't count.
Sweet little Chucky Chuck?
He could feel her beaming over the connection. They both had a soft spot for the kid.
Care if I come join you guys?
Are you kidding? It's never the same without you. She didn't respond right away, and he knew she was about to say something serious. He cringed, waiting.
I can tell you're feeling better, she finally said. And that makes me very happy.
He sighed with relief.
You and me both,
he responded back.
Now get your butt over here.
Teresa showed up at the observation room a few minutes later. She slipped inside without saying anything and pulled up a chair next to Thomas. The whole routine was as comfortable as a well-worn pair of shoes. Chuck looked over at her and winked. Flirting with an older girl was his idea of hilarious, then gave a thumbs up.
How are you, Chuck? She asked.
Been sent to your room yet today?
No, ma'am,
he replied, batting his eyelashes.
Perfect little angel, just like always.
I bet. She reached over Thomas's lap and grabbed a piece of skin on Chuck's leg, then wrenched it hard. Chuck screamed in agony and leaped from his chair, hopping up and down as he rubbed at the sore spot.
Not cool,
he yelled.
Not cool. That's for stealing the deviled eggs from my lunch tray when I went back for a drink, she said,
one eyebrow raised accusingly.
You know how much I love deviled eggs. What?
He asked.
How did you...
He looked at Thomas.
She's some kind of mind reader.
Don't mess with Teresa, Thomas said, slowly shaking his head back and forth, as if in pure awe of her powers.
If I teach you nothing else in life, my son, it's that.
Don't mess with Teresa.
Come here, you little deviled egg,
Teresa said, now chasing Chuck around the room, trying to smother him with hugs. For all his flirting jokes, the kid hated when she did that. Thomas leaned back in his chair, enjoying every second of it.
Yeah, he thought. I feel good again.
Chapter 37 2:30.3.14 6:03 a.m. Another insertion day. The boy's name was Zart, and it was his turn to enter the box. It was Teresa's job to prep the new insertion this time. She'd prepped Zart the day before, and he'd gone through the swipe procedure early that morning. Thomas looked over at him, unconscious on the gurney. Whatever they gave the kids to knock them out seemed like it could fell a rhinoceros. He looked up at Teresa and flashed her a smile. They were in the elevator, along with Dr. Page, two nurses, and Chuck. Once again, Thomas had convinced Dr. Page to allow his sidekick along, which Chuck loved. He was always excited for a break from his normal schooling and testing. Thomas felt more strongly each day that the boy's future shouldn't be hidden from him, that it would be good to prepare his mind, even if much of it ended up being on a subconscious level. The car hummed as they descended toward the basement of the facility. No one spoke the entire trip down, not even Chuck, which was a minor miracle. Thomas's mind wandered.
What's it like?
He wondered, staring down at Zart's sleeping face.
How weird it must be to wake up with your memories erased.
Dr. Page had explained many times how it worked, but what did it feel like? That was what Thomas wanted to know. To have a completely intact picture of the world and how it was, but with everything that mattered scrubbed out. Friends, families, places... It was a fascinating and terrible thing. The elevator chimed and they were there. The basement. It pricked a little at Thomas's heart. It was where he and his friends had met one night a week for so long. Where he'd turned from a lonely, miserable kid to a relatively happy person with friends. The doors opened and the nurses rolled the gurney out into the hallway. Thomas looked at Teresa, and they followed Dr. Page out. Chuck tagged along, his eyes wide with anticipation. If what lay in his future bothered him, he never showed it.
The wheels of the gurney clacked against the tile floor as they made their way down the long hallway to where the box waited.
"Why are you guys so quiet?" Chuck asked.
Every few seconds he had to trot for a couple of steps to keep up with everyone else.
"Because it's the butt crack of dawn," Teresa replied. "Before the usual wake-up, and we haven't had breakfast."
"Or coffee," Dr. Page added, showing a rare spark of personality.
"I'd kill a griever with my bare hands for a cup of coffee."
Thomas and Teresa exchanged looks of surprise, then amusement. The woman had just made a joke. Maybe the world was ending.
"It scares me," Teresa said out of nowhere.
"What scares you?"
he asked.
"The idea of the maze. Insertion. But it also kinda excites me, too. Sometimes I envy the boys in the Glade. Yeah, they rough it pretty hard, but they have fun."
Thomas shrugged, acting like he'd never given it any thought. The truth was, lately he'd been thinking about it a lot.
"I don't know," Thomas said. "You know the Sykes aren't going to let the fun and games last for very long in there."
Teresa didn't respond at first. They walked on down the hall in silence.
"The crap'll hit the fan soon enough," she finally agreed.
Finally, they reached the wide double doors that led to the chamber holding the box. With all the sophistication surrounding Wicked and their trials and experiments and technological wonders, there wasn't much fanfare to the box itself. It sat in a wide, dusty room at the bottom of a shaft that led up to the Glade, connected to enormous gears on the surface by chains and pulleys. A magical lift to a brand new world. Thomas shuddered to think what it must be like to wake up in the dark box of metal, memories gone. It had to be terrifying.
"Here we are,"
Dr. Page said, as the nurses wheeled the gurney toward the looming wall of silvery steel.
"I know we've spent the last few weeks getting more subjects into the maze as the Sykes make adjustments to the program, but after Zart, we're going to become a little more regimented. We'll be sending one boy a month into the Glade, same day, same time, like clockwork, unless something changes."
"They always keep their options open, don't they?"
Thomas said to Teresa.
"They sure do."
Somehow she projected the image of her sticking her tongue out and crossing her eyes. Made no sense, and yet seemed the perfect response. The nurses stopped right next to the box, which was about 10 feet high. One of them went around the corner and came back dragging a large, sturdy stepladder on wheels.
"Where's the door to the thing?"
Chuck asked, examining the seamless wall closest to them, then venturing around to the other sides. No one answered until he rounded the entire container and ended up back where he started.
"Just watch,"
Teresa said, not hiding her disdain for the process.
"It's not what you'd call glamorous," Thomas added.
"Can't wait,"
Chuck said, a little too cheerfully. Sometimes Thomas thought the boy had a drier sense of humor than anyone knew.
"Okay,"
Dr. Page said.
"Let's get him up the stairs. Everything should be set. They're already in the command room."
The nurses grabbed Zart, one by his legs, the other lifting him by curling his arms underneath his chest, and lifted him off the gurney. Then they slowly and carefully walked up the rolling stepladder, which shifted under their weight precariously. They reached the top, and then it became an exercise in awkwardness as the nurse holding Zart around the chest hefted him to the top edge of the box, struggling until he could flap the boy's arms over the lip of the metal to keep him in place. He waited, made sure the boy wouldn't fall, then leaned down to help the other nurse lift Zart by the legs.
"So lame," Thomas said to Teresa. "They really couldn't come up with a better way to do this? They have implants in our brains, flat transes, little robot bugs with cameras on them. And this is how they..."
He cut off when the nurses accidentally released Zart's body too early, and the boy toppled over and vanished from sight, crashing into the bottom of the box with a rattling boom that echoed off the high ceiling. Chuck snickered, then looked ashamed when Dr. Page gave him a nasty glare.
"Sorry,"
he muttered.
Is he okay? Dr. Page asked, her voice filled with annoyance. Both nurses were on their tiptoes, leaning over the edge as they examined Zart down below.
Looks fine, one of them said. He pulled himself up into a ball. He's sleeping like a baby.
Why not put a door in the side of the box? Chuck asked it in a voice so sweet that it was obviously meant to be the opposite. As in, how could you guys be so stupid?
Everything we do is for a reason, Paige answered, but she didn't try very hard to make it sound convincing. Had it maybe even been another joke?
Come on, let's go watch his insertion.
What happens now?
Chuck asked as they walked back the way they came, down the impossibly long hallway.
When will he wake up?
Surprisingly, Dr. Page answered, for once humoring the boy's wild curiosity.
In about an hour, she said.
As soon as he does, we'll start the simulated ride up and begin our observations. We should see some new and very interesting patterns over the next day or two. Her mood had changed quickly, her tone and light step exuding excitement.
Cool,
Chuck replied. They kept walking. Thomas watched, Teresa beside him. They'd made Chuck go back to his room, not wanting him to see the pure anguish the boys felt upon first waking up in the box. No need to push it with preparing the boy for his future. Together, Thomas and Teresa watched, and imagined what it must be like. Zart awoke in darkness, the cameras in the box barely able to catch his movements. He said nothing at first, stumbling around the metal compartment like a drunkard. But then he became aware of everything all at once. The loss of memory, the strange place, the movement, the sounds. He panicked, pounding on the walls, screaming,
"Help me! Help me!"
The hysteria went on. A cut on his fist burst open, slicking his hand with blood. Finally, he collapsed to the floor, then crawled into a corner. There, he pulled his legs in close to his chest and wrapped his arms around them. At first, the tears were only a trickle, but soon the sobs came, his shoulders shaking as he cried. The box came to a stop and a bubble of silence filled the air, like something that might pop and explode at the slightest touch. Zart almost jumped out of his clothes when the ceiling suddenly popped and squealed, two doors grinding as they slid open. The light of 10 burning suns blinded him from above. He pressed both hands against his eyes, rolling back and forth on the floor as he groaned. He heard rustling, whispers, light laughter coming from the sky. Finally, he peeked through his fingers, actually able to see. He saw a square of light, silhouettes of 30 boys wrapped around it, all of their heads bent, looking down at him. Some of them elbowed their neighbor, pointed, snickered. A rope dropped, the loop tied at its end landing right in front of him. He stood, put his foot in the loop, held onto the rope with both hands. They pulled him up, dragged him over the edge of the box, lifted him to his feet. 3 or 4 boys dusted him off, hitting him harder than they needed to, but their whoops and laughs made it all seem okay, like old friends welcoming home a lost soul. A tall kid with brown hair stepped up to him, held out a hand. Zart took it, shook.
"My name's George," the greeter said. "Welcome to the Glade."
Chapter 38 2:30.3:15 3:15 p.m. The day had gone much like the ones before it. Breakfast, a couple of classes, more time in the observation room. Lunch, observation room. All the while, Teresa by his side. Chuck was allowed to join them once his afternoon classes were done. Chuck on the left, Teresa on the right. Thomas didn't know exactly what his role with Wicked was developing into. They seemed to let him do whatever he wanted, go wherever he wanted. He usually ate his meals in the cafeteria with the subjects who hadn't yet been sent into the maze. He didn't click with them like he had with Newt, Albie, and Minho, but they were mostly cool.
two guys named Jeff and Leo were especially nice, although they were obviously preoccupied with what lay in store for them. They'd heard rumors about what the maze was like and what it might become. Mostly, though, they kept to themselves.